joy. This is our topic for this month, and it's so interesting when you sign up for a talk and then you have this time to work on it and think about it. And this topic has just shifted and changed for me, some because of the other talks that have gone before me, and some, well, just like yesterday, Seattle Insight had a volunteer appreciation gathering, and it was just lovely, and just the sharing of community and what volunteering brings to us and how it helps us really feel like a part of Seattle Insight. Oh, it was just a lovely meeting, and it worked on my mind about an additional big aspect of what I'm talking about today. So it's not quite the talk that I thought it was going to be. We'll see how this goes. Joy, pamoja, is the second, as I think of it, it's the third step in transcendental dependent arising, which is our topic for this year. But in my mind, it's the second step of hope, of the positive, of having taken our suffering and chosen, instead of the despair, to search for what we have an inkling could really help. And so last month we discussed faith. And just as with faith, the word that we translate the Pali into, faith, this month joy, can be confusing, because not all of us associate joy with what is being talked about in pamoja, which is this third step in transcendental dependent arising. And I sometimes like to think of it as kind of that spark that faith gives us. It's a spark that once we're starting on this path, as Bhikkhu Bodhi says in his commentary, when we gain faith in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, the stress and tension of our old way of being falls away, and there springs up a surge of joy conditioned by this faith. So it can be a joy, if that works for you, or maybe a spark. Hope is kind of a loaded word, but the other word I think of is connection, that we begin to feel connected with something greater than ourselves. And it's what really helps us move forward. And when I think of this topic, I just go back to this moment in my life that I want to share with you, because to me it's a bit of a metaphor for this journey. It was about 2 decades ago, so a long time ago, fortunately. I had been in a deep, long depression. It was a soul-numbing time. Everything that had given me joy, my writing, my garden, my friends, my family, just left me dull. And in fact, I felt disconnected from everything. I would watch people being happy and I'd feel like, I can't get there. I'm not there. There was this separation. And friends and family finally convinced me that I needed to do something about this. So I got a list of therapists who accepted my insurance, and I spent a day calling them. And I talked to all sorts of people, very authoritative people, very kind, people who seemed very sweet. But one of the things that worried me, and this may seem silly because I wasn't feeling a creative spark, but I was worried that if I got therapized, I would no longer be creative. I wouldn't have any reason to be creative anymore. And so I was looking for someone who had worked with creative people. And toward the end of the day, I got this answering machine message. This is way back when there were answering machines. That was just joyful. This woman's voice was just joyful. And there was a laughter behind her voice. And I thought, that's her. And I left her a message. And she called me very shortly afterwards. I told her about my concern about losing my creative spark. And she said, no worries. I've worked with a lot of creative people. I'm a poet. I'm a dancer. And there was that moment. I had faith that there might be a way out of this hole. And we worked for a while, and I was learning a lot about myself. And so it's kind of like, you know, the Buddha, the Dhamma, learning all of this. And then one day, on the street that I walk almost every day, I noticed that the cherry trees were in bloom. I noticed those blossoms, and I felt, huh, I had that spark. And I smiled at everybody I passed. I felt connection. I was connected again. Something. Maybe the cherry blossoms. Maybe the wisdom of going out, because this therapist had told me, every day, go out and feel the earth underneath your feet. And as you're walking, ask a tree or a shrub to just hold your cares for now while you're taking this walk. And you'll come back and take them back from them. You're not going to weigh them down. And so I did this with faith, thinking, well, maybe someday this is going to work. And that day it did. And I felt this connection. And it gave me, that spark gave me the momentum, the faith to pursue this. This is working. That's the joy that we're talking about here. That's this spark. Something. And what we've been doing and what we've been studying and the Dharma talks we've been listening to in our meditations is finally, I feel it. It's this sense, not only of connection. I'm back in the world. I can connect with the world. But it's a sense that there may be liberation. There may be something to all this. Bhikkhu Bodhi talks about an Indian legend about a special gem which the mythical universal monarch, when thrown into a stream of turbid water, it immediately causes it to become clear so this monarch can drink it. And he describes the strands of vegetation float away, the mud settles, and the water becomes pure, serene, and sweet-tasting, fit to be drunk by the monarch. Similarly, when the gem of faith is set up in the heart, it causes the hindrances to disappear, the defilements to settle, and the mind to become clear, lucid, and serene. Now, that didn't all happen to me that day on this walk, but I felt this moment. So that's the moment that I think of, I come back to and back to and back to in this topic. It gives us a taste. It reveals the ease of no suffering, the possibility. Faith, ethical living. You know, that's what we're learning. When, you know, 2 years ago we worked with the Paramis. Last year we worked with the Eightfold Path and the Four Noble Truths. And this is all a path. It's a practice. It's not all going to happen overnight. But if we don't get these little tastes, why would we go on? And it's a gladness of the heart. Christina Feldman has some wonderful talks about gladdening the heart. And she says it's a lightness that one feels when shedding the darkness. And certainly that's what I felt that day. The weight of remorse and regret. You know, when you're in a depression, some of it is, it's turned in, it can be anger, it can be disappointment, and it's turned in on yourself. I learned this from my therapist. And it's turned in on yourself in a way that you think, everything that I've done in my life has led me to this. This is, I did this. And with the Dharma, we're learning that we all have some sorrow. We all suffer. And we all have a way out. And if you've experienced in Sangha, and we do this here in our small groups and in our discussions, and we do it when we meet in person in small groups, we share our struggles in our lives. And that was a real awakening for me when I realized all these people are telling my story. We all have such similar stories. We're all sharing this. We're not alone. We're not unique. We're not the horrible one that the rest of the world kind of notices and shrinks back from. We're just human beings. And we all want happiness. This isn't a promise of happiness. This is a promise of less suffering, a way forward. Christina Feldman talks about letting go of discontent. And in Awakening Joy, James Baraz has a book and actually a class called Awakening Joy, 10 Steps to Joy. And he too talks about, we learn to just be content with our lives as we are. There's so much joy to be had if instead of focusing, as we tend to do as human beings, on the problems. This is the problem I have to solve today. This is what's going wrong. This is what isn't quite right yet. And Rick Hansen, a meditator, a Dharma teacher, and also a therapist, talks about rewiring our minds because we're hardwired to notice the problems, what we're not doing right. But we can practice joy. And one of the things that I did that day that I don't always do when I have a moment of joy is I noticed it and I celebrated it because it was something so new for months and months and months, hadn't felt this way. And we need to do that more often, to notice the joyful moments, to actually maybe take some time in our day to say, what joyful things happened to me today? You know, people talk about a gratitude list, either in the morning when you wake up or at night when you're going to sleep. This is a gratitude list. I mean, joy is gratitude. Gratitude is joy. So we can practice this. We can get better at noticing how much joy is around us. So one of my KM groups years ago chose this book, James Baraz's Awakening Joy, and we all admitted that we were kind of snickering at the idea, joy, that really isn't serious Dharma. We're going to spend, you know, 10 months reading this book about joy. It seemed shallow and frivolous. But at the end of those 10 months, we all noticed how we were changing, how we were in the world, how often we were thanking people because we were noticing when people did lovely things, how often we were simply telling people we appreciated them and noticing what we appreciate and talking more about what we appreciated. It really changed us. And some of it was very simple little exercises, like instead of saying, I have to do this today, saying, I get to do this today. I've tried this with my work because I love writing novels. I love what I do as a profession, but it's a lot of work. And there are many, many days when I sit down and I think, oh, I have to do this. I have to get this character out of this mess. And when I think about what I get to do all day, I mean, I get to tell stories. I just sit here and I conjure a 14th century world of these characters that I've been living with for a long time. I'm writing the 17th book in this particular series right now, and I've written others that are set in the 14th century. Sometimes I have to think about the characters that I get to play with today. Oh, today Magda is going to be in the story, and I love her, and she's always wise, and she's going to teach me something. But you know, if I'm not paying attention, it can be a grudge. It can be a drudging day. And instead, when I tell myself, I get to do this, isn't this absurd? And people like these stories. People like these characters. They want more of them. I mean, you would think that's every writer's dream, but from moment to moment, we're thinking about the deadline and the fact that I've just written myself into a corner. I don't know. I don't know who done it. Because I'm not one of those people who writes with a big outline like I did at the very beginning. Now I just kind of tell my characters, oh, this is what happened and go for it. And I watch them. And that is a real spark of faith that somehow this is all going to work out. And so far it has. I'm still waiting for the day that it doesn't. And sometimes I have to sit down and tell myself, this is fun. If it isn't fun, just stop doing it, because you certainly, you know, this isn't a way to a billionaire's life. But yeah, there's that joy. And James Baraz is just so good at taking you through these steps of, you know, just noticing, appreciating, opening, softening, getting curious. Getting curious is a wonderful route to joy. But, you know, so much of it is just finding contentment with what is. And maybe contentment could be another one, another word to substitute for joy if you're having a little trouble thinking, oh, I'm feeling joy. Maybe you're content. You're not wanting anything to change right now. This is good. I'm okay with what is. Rodney, our founding teacher, often said, is there joy in this moment? Even in the darkest moments, even when I was starting the sit and Maggie decided to screech back and forth in my office, I could find the joy in that. I mean, she's alive. She's crazy. I love her. She makes me laugh. And she's having a great time. It's just switching around. It's rewiring to notice. There's a lot that we could go into despair about right now. So our practice has to be very, very intentional right now. Because we need this uplift to be resilient. I chose that poem by Joy Harjo the other, because I've been thinking about it a lot, and I used it in the morning sit on Thursday. And then I thought for today, especially after thinking overnight about the wonderful meeting yesterday about volunteers, this was the poem for this moment, because it's the community. It's our coming together. It's, I don't know if any of you saw the videos of communities singing together in Minneapolis. When so much horror was happening and communities got together and sang, that's joy. I mean, they are raising their voices together in community. Wow. Or the monks walking across the United States from Texas to Washington, D.C., and the people who would line up to see them. That was joy. It was joy to watch it. I'm sure it was incredible joy to be there. It's not the end of all the suffering. Everything hasn't been solved. The world's still the way it is. But we need these inspiring moments. And we need to give up this idea, the trap of thinking that joy is lightweight, because it's not. This joy we need in practice. In fact, in so many passages, the Buddha talks about joy being necessary for concentration. Because this joy, as Bhikkhu Bodhi is saying, this joy clears the water. This joy and this faith that something is going to change. We can live differently. Quiets us. For the moment, we're not grasping. We're not filled with remorse. We're at peace and we can concentrate. And we can go more deeply into our practice. So, you know, that's why this joy is so important for this transcendental dependent arising, for everything that's going to come after this. We need this inspiration. Bhante Sujato says, the Buddha says the Dharma is for one who feels. Our suffering is the ticket to liberation. And certainly that depression that I was in was the inspiration. And this therapist that I found, she was the person who said, what kind of spiritual work have you been interested in? And I told her, well, Zen, and I've practiced yoga for most of my life. And she encouraged me. She said, really, really delve into this, because that's going to be your medicine. I mean, was I lucky in who I found as a therapist just because I liked her answering machine message? After all these kind of grim, serious people I'd spoken to all that day, here was someone who sparkled. And I wanted that sparkle. I knew enough to know that I wanted that sparkle. And that's when we look at the Dalai Lama, when we look at so many teachers, they have this sparkle. And we just go, I want that. I want what they have. Faith, joy. That's just how it happens. Thank you for your kind attention. I'm really grateful that yesterday's meeting really inspired me to add the community to this, because I really think it's important. So we're going to break up into small groups now. Okay, I think we're all back. So, I hope you had some great discussions and some inspiration, and you can raise your hand down at the bottom of your screen. There's a raise hand for some of us, and for some of us, it's in the React section. Or if you wave real hard, I'll probably see you, and then you can unmute. Hi, Judith, do you want to unmute?
Yes. Thanks for the talk, Candace. It gave me all sorts of things to think about. One thing I was thinking about is how important it is to have the intention of finding the joy. And also I was thinking about how last month, we were talking about how doubt is not the opposite of faith, but despair is the opposite of faith. And so I was thinking about how sorrow is not the opposite of joy, but I think despair is also the opposite of joy. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you're despairing, there is no joy.
There is no joy, but sorrow and joy can go to hand in hand, you know. They can both be there at the same time. I think about the death of my father when I was present for, and there was sorrow, but there was also, I could see the liberation, you know, and there was joy. Yeah. So anyway.
Oh, thank you for that. Yeah, it really is interesting when we think about what really is the opposite of these feelings. It's not always the obvious thing. Anyone else want to share what came up for you and your group, or during the month, or that you're not getting joy? Oh, it's a quiet morning. You all got all talked out on in your groups. Well, I'd love to hear what the groups talked about, because I didn't get to sit in on any. Neil and Lillian.
I think for me, kind of what came up was I really related to what you mentioned about joy and gratitude being kind of like related. I think I had made something of a similar experience to what you talked about as well, where I think this is, you know, like this was probably around, you know, over 10 years ago, where I was feeling a lot of kind of just, you know, despair might, you know, like it's not the word I would have used at the time, but it might be kind of the word that I would kind of use to describe it now, where just kind of like feeling like kind of this despair, like kind of like the pointlessness of life. And kind of like how, you know, we're all just kind of like, you know, going towards death and not really being able to find that joy in life. And it wasn't necessarily the reason that I came to this practice, but kind of like through this practice that kind of, I don't think I noticed how it faded at the time, but it feels like it was so long ago now. It's something I've almost forgotten about, to where there is kind of just this kind of like inherent joy and gratitude for every moment that there is. And kind of just like shifting this perspective, you know, you know, like I think like part of it was kind of like, you know, going from being a kid and being kind of like in school and transitioning towards like being in my 20s and seeing like all these people getting older and seeing my parents aging and seeing myself aging and kind of, you know, not really being aware of that when you're younger and then kind of like starting to become more and more aware of that as I got older. But then having that shift in perspective for just gratitude for what there is in just every given moment. And kind of like, you know, noticing, you know, for us, just like, you know, having our daughter now and just like kind of like having this, you know, this is kind of gratitude for like just everything that we have present, right? Like it's not like every single external condition that we want is being met, but it almost feels like they all are, because it feels like all just like noticing that gratitude for everything you have, it feels like what more could you ask for? And so, yeah, it feels like those two things really kind of just like go hand in hand.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. Yeah, once we notice all the beauty in our lives, it's quite astonishing. Lauren.
It was Judith's sharing made me think when you were talking about the opposite of joy, and that sorrow is not the opposite of joy necessarily. And Judith was talking about being with her father when he died. And I was remembering tenderness. Sometimes when I am really suffering, you know, I mean, I'm really sad about something, and it opens me to a tenderness. And there's a kind of joy and tenderness, which actually I was thinking, what is that? And it's connection. It's like connection to my heart, and then it's with others, because that tenderness opens me to connecting. So anyway, I really appreciate opening the all aspects of joy, you know, that it's not just one thing necessarily.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, tenderness is such a sweet one, such a sweet feeling, and it can be so tinged with a realization that, you know, it's not going to last. I know when I went to be with my sister almost a year ago now, just a couple weeks before she died, there was such joy in our gathering. We just had such a wonderful time together, even though nothing had changed. She was dying. It just, yeah, soothes.
I wasn't going to share this story, but then when Lauren talked about tenderness, so there has been joy in knowing that my heart has tended, has softened, and that it's really accessible to me in ways that it didn't used to feel that way. It was really hard for years and years for me to feel metta or compassion. I mean, it was more of an intellectual thing. So here's my story. So Friday night, I turned on the news and this man had driven his car into the synagogue in West Bloomfield, Michigan, which is my brother's synagogue. He drove right towards the preschool where my sister-in-law taught for 20 years. He ended up dying. One of the security people was hurt, but everybody else was fine. And so Friday night, there was just like, oh my God, you know, and that the war in Iran has like come home kind of thing, because it felt so close. I've spent time in that temple. And then Saturday morning, I opened the newspaper and there was this article about that, and the article about the man, and how what had happened. Some members of his family had died in a bombing in Lebanon. And without thinking about or justifying or what would be the right response, instantly reading this, my hand went to my heart and I wished this man, this assailant, an easy passage in his death. It felt so natural to me, and I just, the joy was, oh, my heart really has expanded in the practice. And so that was my story.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that, Suze. I'm so glad you decided to share it. That is just beautiful. That's really what it's all about, isn't it? How we connect. Thank you. Thomas.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your talk, Candace. It's sparked a lot of inspiration, so I appreciate that. And I wanted to sort of respond to, Lauren, what you talked about with tenderness. It made me think about, I think, some of my journey around joy has been from sort of starting in a very egoic place of, you know, when things go my way, I get things the way I like them, or, you know, I'm joyful, you know, I'm happy. And over the years with this practice, realizing that, you know, things are constantly changing. Many times you don't get what you want, or you have feelings that you are not necessarily looking for. And I think a word comes to mind, and that's joining, where the traditional egoic mind wants some things from life. But I think I'm seeing a movement towards joining life. So you're part of the process with all other creatures on this planet, the pains and the joys and stuff like that. And so you're really part of it, part of the process. And I find that that makes sense to me in a way, that shift in view.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Thich Nhat Hanh's interbeing, that it's all, we're all part of it. And isn't that reassuring? Thank you, Thomas. Thank you. Claire.
Thank you, Candace, for this lovely morning. And Suze, your story really touched my heart. Thank you for sharing that. What I was thinking about joy was that I had a moment maybe, I don't know, 20 years ago that I was with a dear friend, and I was so happy. And I thought, this won't be forever. But right at this moment, we're so happy. I'm so filled with joy. And I just kind of made that mark. And that is still like an ornament hanging in my window. You know, just that I marked it, and that, yeah, pure joy.
Oh, what a beautiful ornament. And what a beautiful way to describe that, that it's something that's there and sparkling and inspiring you all the time. Yeah. Well, it sounds like we're all a little more joyful than we were when we started, perhaps when we started this morning. Thank you so much for sharing. I have a few announcements.